This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Vonslow, and I'm going to take you back to the year 1939, when Charlie Chaplin and his Nazi regime enslaved Europe and tried to take over the world. But first, let's hear from our sponsor, Napa Auto Tech Training. Check out our Napa Auto Tech Facebook page to find out the latest Napa Auto Tech virtual class scheduled at a time that is convenient for you. Learn from the comfort of your home. All right, I'm kidding. We're not going back to 1939. And just in case Charlie Chaplin didn't lead the Nazi regime. So, well, let's not get into that. Anyways, what I do want to talk about is something I've been thinking a lot about lately. I don't really know why. I don't have like a direct story, at least automotive related, that would explain why over the last few weeks or so, I've just been kind of thinking about zero-sum games and zero-sum. And I guess I've talked about it a little bit from time to time in different episodes and hinted at it in one in particular, probably more than others. But zero-sum is just a fancy way of saying that there is an absolute single winner and then everyone else or everything else loses. They're out. And most sports that we watch are zero sum. There is a winner and a loser in every contest. And of course, at the end, there is one champion and not another one. It's not shared in any way. That's kind of virtually everything we deal with sports wise. And I think it just gets translated over into life. I suppose to a certain degree, sometimes it gets ingrained in us from an early age on up. And look, I get it. I'm not in no way advocating for the participation trophies and stuff like that. Like, there is something to recognizing a winner. And in certain situations, zero sum, that's the way it is. And there's many cases in life where that's the way it is. Zero sum isn't fundamentally bad. But I do think because of it, we catch ourselves marketing and employing business strategies that we don't necessarily see as being zero sum, and yet that's the driving force behind them. And maybe driving force is a really bad description of that, because that might imply or does imply that that is the actual strategy, the actual intent of whoever's putting it to use, that the marketing strategies, how we're running our businesses, how we're marketing ourselves, promoting ourselves. And that's broken. I think that starts to fall apart and might reveal weakness in how we market ourselves, how we promote ourselves, how we conduct ourselves to the motoring public, to our clients, and even in and around our competition. And therefore, because of my lack of imagination, I think I find myself going back to the well on something that I hope you don't find it annoying or eye rolling. I have to go back to it because I just feel it's the best representation that I know of, or at least feel that I can speak to a little bit, is professional wrestling. You know, it's a performance. I think that I've talked about that first time I brought it up in a For the Record with Carm, and then had another episode talking about it in episode 27 with Andrew Fisher. But it's just a really good example of watching a quote unquote competition performance where it's not really zero sum. Maybe from our perspective watching, there is a winner and a loser, but from the participants, it's not. It's a performance. And how they get there isn't necessarily scripted. And I guess it depends on which company and who the performers are, the athletes, if you will, because it is. It's definitely athletic. It's definitely sports entertainment. The outcomes are predetermined. how they get there a lot of times isn't scripted to the letter. Depending on experience level, they may have a chat or two before the actual match. They may work on something called a high spot, a very specific stunt, if you will, or a move or move set. But a lot of times the real veterans, they call it in the match, during the match, and they're calling it based off of crowd reaction. And I guess the point being is they're working together, put on a performance, and even the one that's to go over or the one that is scripted to win, one of their biggest jobs during that performance is to make the other participant look really, really good. Make it look like they have a chance to win, unless it's, you know, scripted in such a way to be what they would call a squash match, which is to build up a character to be virtually unstoppable. But you don't really see that much during the bigger events. So it's not zero sum. And the reason I bring that up or reference it is because I'm thinking about a lot of people that enter that profession that they go to learn come from football or really amateur wrestling backgrounds or freestyle wrestling backgrounds where it is all about them, right? They train on a team, but really every match is all about them. There's no team to fall back on. It's what they do. It's all about their preparation, their efforts, their skill, their will to win, all that stuff. And now they get into something where, you know, instead of protecting yourself from being taken down, you're needing to let somebody take you down and, oh, by the way, make it look extremely painful or, you know, entertaining. That takes a major, major pivot. That takes a major course correction on one's mindset that when you're going in there as a competitor, especially one-on-one, it's not really a team game, not the actual game. It's a lot of team leading up to it. But once you're on the mat, you know, as a freestyle wrestler, as an amateur wrestler, it's not a team sport anymore. It's all about you and what you can do. You're executing a strategy or altering your strategy on the fly, where now you have to work with someone and you have to elevate them. You have to help them look really good. You have to help them make you look really good. And I feel like that just translates so well to our shops. NAPA Auto Tech training sessions are being conducted day and night in a town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA Auto Tech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. AutoTech's entry-level Build-A-Tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. AutoTech's higher-level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And, turning to the front of the store, the AutoTech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary, safety topics. Well, it's here. AutoTech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC-to-DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Auto Tech Training. Our shops can't service everybody. I don't think we would want to. I don't think you'd want to have every customer in town, that there is no one else that they go to unless your town is, wow, you know, I guess depending on how big the shop is, I guess. So it's hard to throw out numbers there, but you have just the right amount of cars in town to keep your shop busy and profitable. Maybe then that works. But the vast majority of us, not only do we not have the capacity, we wouldn't want to. There is certain clients we do not want at our shops, whatever that means. It's different for different shops and shop strategies. But I think therein lies where not so much a performance. I think we need to perform. I think we should believe in it. But our marketing strategy should shift a little bit. The way we talk to our clients or just people in general about auto repair, instead of this zero sum type of idea in the back of our heads, that it's a little bit different. It's now about putting ourselves over as well as kind of bringing our competition along with us, making them look good too. Usually the examples I give with this is the shop I work at, Riverside. I'm doing radio ads. They're roughly 2 minutes. Luckily, I'm given a lot of leeway with that, so some of those spots go a little bit longer. But it comes off as a Q&A type of the thing, where every episode, if you will, every ad, 2-minute ad, I'm answering a question about car specifically or the auto repair process. And I try to talk about a lot of different things, where not even just how this system works, but also a scenario where somebody is disgruntled, and not necessarily with Riverside, but any shop. And I talk about how lucky I feel the people are in our town that they have many shops to choose from that are all fundamentally honest, that it's a bad, bad business strategy to be dishonest, especially in a small town. How long could that last? Think about that. As a consumer, do you think they really lied to you? Do you think they really intentionally were trying to pull the wool over your eyes? Do you think they intentionally are trying to screw you over? That can't last. It's just a bad long-term business strategy, and therefore, it just doesn't seem that plausible. What are the chances it was more a misunderstanding, or what if they just made an honest mistake? And then, you know, following up with standing behind the work. And the feedback has been extremely good. That, I guess, breath of fresh air has been used a few times by different clients that have stopped in. Some of them are regular clients of ours. Some of them heard the radio ads, and after a few of them decided that they were going to try us out, and that it's different. It's acceptable when most ads are, we're awesome, we're the best, best bang for your buck, most valuable, provide the most value, the cheapest, etc. That's what you're used to hearing. And now I just listen to somebody who's paying for airtime to not throw the competition under the bus, to lift them up, to, in some cases, help build confidence in a shop that they're already going to that isn't Riverside. I guess maybe I just stole the idea from Miracle on 34th Street. I don't know. But it just doesn't make sense to me to run everybody down, which is, if you go back to that, it's a For the Record episode 50 or FTR 050, where I talk about Ric Flair and his strategy and that it didn't make sense to run the competition down. And so maybe this is a little bit of regurgitation, but I think back then I was focused a lot on just Ric Flair and his strategy. This is also bringing in the idea of the zero sum, and that you should be really just thinking about it and looking at how you're thinking about your shop, whether you're in management, the owner, service advisor, technician, mechanical specialist, technical specialist, whatever your position is. How are you viewing your shop? How are you viewing the other shops? And how do you conduct yourself? And thinking about that zero sum idea that really does dominate our landscape, not just in auto repair, but just if you're into sports, that's what you see. And any sorts of competition, there's a clear winner and then there's a loser and that's it. And in many of those cases, that's what it is. That's the way it needs to be. That's the way it should be. But not necessarily for competition and business, especially when we're trying to increase the value of what we do. And not at virtually every level, be it the work we're turning out in our shop, be it the entire repair market. And that includes the dealerships, independent shops, franchise shops, everybody. Can we raise the value, specifically the perceived value, right? Raising the actual value is a whole different animal and much easier for us to control in our shops, and then promoting training to our competition, which seems odd, right? I think we hear about it a little bit here and there, but how many of us are calling up colleagues at other repair shops saying, hey, did you see this class? Did you see this online class is going to be put on? Does your shop use any of the Napa online training? We got a Napa store just down the street. Are you getting hooked up with that? Have you tried it? They might, you know, talk to the store, see if you can get a sample. We've been using it for a while. We're really happy with it. Have you seen this new thing called Today's Class? Have you gone to this training conference? Apex right around the corner. Aren't you a Napa Auto Care? Are you thinking about going to, have you ever been to a Napa Expo? There's so many examples of it. Do we ever do that? How many of us have ever, had to travel a short distance, relatively short, we'll just say an hour to a training class, instructor led, live in person? How many of us have ever called up other shops to arrange rides and maybe even a caravan, stopping somewhere to eat on the way? How often does it occur to us? And yet that would raise the actual value of what we're doing. Everybody. And if we can continually increase the actual value, the perceived value will follow, especially as we all keep educating on it. And it also gives you a chance to sit with these techs or managers, owners, and talk a little bit of strategy, talk about what you're doing. And, a lot of times when you're sympathizing with a certain struggle and you kind of turn to them and they're like, inflation sucked. I've been scared to go up with my rates, but I got to do it. I can't be doing this for all these years and trying to build this. And now, honestly, I could just sell it all and get a full-time job somewhere and make more money. What's the point? I think I got to go up with my rates, and which now they got to think about it a little bit and just talking back and forth. What are you doing? How do you do this? But yeah, gosh darn it. Yet another episode where professional wrestling is rearing its head, but it makes sense that the whole strategy, if you will, where they years and years and years ago started out actually fighting and legitimate injuries, and then figuring out like, hey, this is how we're feeding our families. Nobody should have to go out there and get hurt, not be able to provide. So let's make it a bit of a work. Let's try to make it look like it hurts. Or maybe it does hurt, but nobody's getting injured. At least not catastrophically. They can keep going. They can keep fighting, quote unquote fighting, once a week or however many times it ends up being when they're traveling around. And that's the dawn of what we would call professional wrestling. And then really vaulted with flair and traveling around as the champion and working very, very hard to make that region's or territory's champion look really, really good, and cheating if he has to win. Because now he didn't win because he is so much better. He won because he cheated, bent the rules, broke the rules. Can we take some of that? Can we take away the zero sum portion and apply that to our day to days? And of course, we're going to work with our colleagues in the shop, try to make everybody look good, or we should. I guess I can't even imagine a work environment where everyone's really in it 100% for themselves, that just seems catastrophic. If you guys know about a shop like that, you don't need to throw them under the bus, but I would love to hear about stories about that. I guess I can see how certain compensation packages or strategies could spur a certain level of competition that could become toxic. So now that's just within under the roof, creating a zero sum type situation. I hope you understand where I'm going with that we all of us could learn to pivot a little bit, that we can learn to course correct a little bit and consider some of our strategies and the element of which may be zero sum in nature, unwittingly even, and just stepping back and going, you know what, I could tweak this a little bit, or having a meeting with everyone and saying, you know what, the days of dogging on the competition are over. That doesn't work. Long-term bad marketing plan. Here's the new plan. Here's the new strategy. Here's why, you know, maybe abused, but nonetheless true. Rising tide lifts all boats. Let's help raise the tide. So yeah, just slight course corrections, especially long-term, can end up with big differences. And in this case, I think the differences are big for all of us, but especially our businesses, that all around, it just becomes good. It just becomes fundamentally good and positive. It gets really, really hard when you're out there marketing, you know, be it like the radio ads are probably the easiest way to promote that type of kind of a rising tide type, speaking positively of the profession and everyone in it. When that's out there, people know that and you've developed a history of it. And then even outside of the ads, just face to face, that it gets really difficult for the competition to talk much crap about you, because somebody that knows how you speak of your competition, now hearing somebody trash on you, begins, that kind of has the opposite effect and can kind of backfire on the ones talking down, talking negatively. Thank you all for the consistent emails. Thank you for the continued concerns about my dad and Danielle. I really have only positive things to say. I think my dad has gotten kind of the thumbs up to return to whatever activities he wants to. I'm sure I can hear the chainsaw running right now. And yeah, Danielle, I mean, if she's not 100%, she's close. But yeah, I really do appreciate that. It is very, very humbling. And yeah, if you have any comments about the episodes or ideas for new episodes, want to be on the podcast, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. I'm pretty easy to find on social media. Just ask the hackers. You can also email me at mattfonslowpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Matt Fonslow, diagnosing the aftermarket A to Z on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Matt on your favorite listening app. He's very interested in what you have to say. Let him know what you'd like him to cover and come on the show. Matt is all for advancing the aftermarket. Find Matt Fonslow on social media and connect, or on aftermarketradionetwork.com.